condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Bay's tanking guys, something, huh? We should have Mr. Ken O'Neill in a bit. S&P futures down 275. Futures down 29. NASDAQ down 4. So we're down a little bit after the State of the Union, which was pretty interesting. I actually went through the text of the speech last night, and I was like, good Lord, there's some things, no matter what, if we just tell a lie often enough, I guess we'll get there. People start to believe, isn't that the, or who was that? Was that Himmler? Somebody, probably somebody before him, though. Those guys, everybody takes credit for a lot of stuff that's before them. And so the guys, I was in the Tripoli. These guys were starting to watch it. First we were watching it in a closed caption because the Bruins game was on. Then they turned off and actually were listening to it. And all the guys were... Matty Weber, you were quoted, by the way. Hey, Kevin. Is that they
good
were
morning.
There was some reference to a line from with Shakespeare or something. The guy goes, does this guy just take everybody else's line and just wing them in there? I go, Matty Weber claims I'm the only man left that actually gives credence to somebody when I use their line, but they don't. But then just to watch people, some on the cell phone, some cheering, and then, I don't know, it's sort of, it didn't give you a great view that all of a sudden we're going to get our act together as a country in the next year. I don't think.
I watched it, and the things I won't do for stocks and jocks because I really wasn't all that interested.
Oh, I know.
But I figured we'd probably want to discuss.
I know.
I thought it was uninteresting, frankly. There wasn't anything new in there. There were a few, a few fun moments, when he got all the women in white up applauding. That was a good Trump move, good for him. There were even a couple of times, he got Nancy Pelosi on her feet, so, you know, that was probably good for Trump. But on balance, there wasn't a lot new, and there wasn't a lot different, and, I think if you like Trump or you like the Trump agenda, then you probably like the speech.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't like Trump or you don't like the Trump agenda, you probably hated the speech. That's like every other day. So
yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, it's not that big a deal.
But it really is like when you start bringing. It's nice to talk about things and bring guys in, but boy, the last half hour was just The guys are in from Normandy, which is nice to see. There's a few alive and things like that. But you're like, wow.
The one really cool moment was when everybody sang happy birthday to the guy who had been a Holocaust survivor and then also survived the attack in Pittsburgh.
Well, now he was. I did the quick math. Now you shouldn't do this. I mean, the guy was a pretty spectacular dude. So he was 7 when he left over there. Was he? Where was he from? I'm curious to know since they brought it up. Where is he? Was he actually in one of the camps and was rescued?
Yeah, don't know.
I think it sounded like he was, that his, him and his parents were, thought they were being taken to another camp and the soldiers, stopped the train and it was our guys. In which case, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. So, yeah, because doing the math, his birthday would have been 1938. So, yeah, that puts him at 7 and 45. So, you know, at any rate, that, you know, it was kind of cool that everybody sang happy birthday to him. I like that. Every once in a while, we get these little fits of unity.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I wonder, Kevin, I really do. I mean, it's you and I and Maddie and the rest of the people, we do a, you know, I think a yeoman's job at trying to dig out some truth for people and give everybody a start to their morning as best we can. I see what happened to the Federal Reserve in this last week, and I'm, of course, one of the only people who ever look at it. I am stunned, startled, whatever you want to say, about what's happened with this Jay Powell thing. I mean, I think that as a country, I mean, you can say all you want about the left or the right, but we have several. The guy last night is talking about infrastructure. The whole place is going up for grabs. Okay, now, we have highway tax that may not be enough. Who knows? Taxes are never enough, right? We stole the money. I mean, it's not like he can come back and say, here's how we're going to do it. You know, we've been doing nothing but lying to you people for the last God knows how many years. We're going to raise the gas tax 4 cents. And guess what? Under my watch, all that money is going to go for highways. I mean, we have no truth anywhere, Kevin. Nowhere. I mean, we can't even. I mean, this thing, this Jay Powell, this guy. I haven't seen a public official that makes. I think the. I don't think those guys make 150, 200 grand a year. They're on the board of the Fed. I mean, people that work for the Fed do better, a lot better. I know some of them, but I don't. So here's a guy. He was vilified day after day, hour after hour, by every lunatic who thinks they're a monetary theorist and a Fed person. I at least have a couple of, you know, a couple of Chatskys in the brain cell. I mean, I actually went to school with guys that did that. But everybody in this country, I mean, talk about, you know, opinions are like something holes, and everybody's got one, and they all stink. I mean, this guy, and now then he goes to the president, basically is beating him on TV. I looked at the money supply numbers yesterday, Kevin. They've gone from 3.5% growth 5 weeks ago to 6. It's how much money this guy's, the Fed has been beaten into pouring back in the economy. There isn't a soul here. All these people, I have a lot of new clients, which is a very nice thing. Every one of them is so happy because where they were before, they were just flat out long, and most of them. And lost a lot of money in the last quarter and a lot of things. And the fact that the market has come back, they don't, Kevin, nobody cares about the fact that you might be laying the groundwork for another Volcker situation 2, 3, 4 years from now, which, and I never want to go through again in my lifetime. But obviously there's only a few people like me left that even remember it and how bad it was and never want to do it again. Nobody cares that whatever the policy is. If all of a sudden these guys borrow another $1 trillion for infrastructure, okay, after they stole the highway trust fund. Now, do we have to, the money that went, I took a barge trip, Illinois River. This is for the agricultural group. It's pretty neat. We went through one of those locks, and those locks are like, I don't know, Matt, you ever been through one of those things? You know how the one lock here in Chicago River is like 3 feet from the lake level to the river level? These locks are like 150 feet. I mean, you're in the bottom of this massive thing, and you go, holy bleep, what am I doing? All of a sudden, it starts to fill up with water, and you race up like a long, long way. Those locks have not been changed since the 30s. That's when they were built. Now, there's been some repair, but every single time, those poor bastards buy diesel fuel, and you buy a lot of it if you're pushing whatever barges upriver. Every time they buy diesel fuel, they're paying, you know, pick a number, 8, 10, 12%, 12 cents a gallon for lack maintenance. Lack maintenance, it's been 80 years. Where does that money go? I mean, I think we need to start with just a little bit of truth, Kevin, and I didn't see any of it last night on either side. And unless we do that, I think we're somehow, I'm not saying we're going under, but we just keep pushing this thing down the road. Are we going to have infrastructure with another trillion? The world's greatest economy, he's the best president that ever friggin' lived, and he's got a $1 trillion deficit. I mean, what are we doing?
You talk about robbing the highway fund. What happened with the stimulus?
Yeah,
remember shovel ready projects? We did two of them, and what was it like 800 billion?
Yeah,
And then we kind of chuckled a couple of years later that Shovel Ready wasn't quite as shovel ready as we thought. But we spent all the money.
Sure we did.
And that's the part that's mystifying. If it wasn't shovel ready, then, you know, what would a normal human being say? It's not ready to go. Okay, then we'll remodel the kitchen when the contractor's ready to do it.
We're
not going to say, well, I have this money I borrowed for, or I borrowed or I saved or whatever for remodeling the kitchen, and, oh, I can't, nobody's available to do it now. Okay, let's go on vacation. Let's go on a cruise.
Well, I'm going to say, Maddie, you can maybe check this. I'm going to say that the remodel of the burn interchange is going to cost more than it cost to build the Kennedy and Ryan combined. And that's just I'm lobbing that one out
there. In current dollars.
Use the feds, and yet you go by there. There's nobody working, Kevin. There's only three or four companies in the whole area that can do any of these jobs. We will not have somebody else. I'll bet they're all making a ridiculous amount of money where you should have twice as many people making 20% less. And I'm going to say that there's virtually no jobs there because it's a 10-year project and you're giving it. And if we built two more bridges tomorrow, we would give it to the same company and they'd start building it in 2025 because they don't want to hire anybody and you can't give it to anybody else. It's absurd for the Fed to take these projects and give money to states and cities like Chicago, and let them go out for bid and give it to the regular guys, is an abortion, an absolute abortion. There should be federal guidelines and all. So there probably are, but these guys get around it. I mean, there's no way that we should be paying that kind of money for that stuff. It should be taking that long. This thing is going to take three times as long as it did to build the Golden Gate, for God's sake, or Hoover Dam. I mean, what are we doing?
We have better technology for doing it.
Yeah, we have better technology. I mean, the redid bridge over First Avenue. We played softball there. What, maybe three seasons, and the thing was still working on it. Took longer to replace that bridge than I think it did to build the whole Stevenson. I mean, we're not even on the right planet with this stuff. And yet,
the wastefulness. You know, I don't know how we get a public accounting of all this stuff, but we need to.
Yeah. Where did this money go? How much did we spend? You know, I mean, we've got the average wages in this country are what? The average person making $53,000. Now, I, for one, don't think that iron workers and people like that should get stiffed. I mean, I don't at all. But if we're talking about a 10-year job or something and there's only 15 people, why don't they did a job in the Dan Ryan when I was in high school, college. Kevin, it was 24/7. This thing.
Yeah, I remember. You know, I remember when they used to do it that way. It was 24/7, and there was a lot of incentive to finish early. There was a lot of money available to finish early. Apparently now the money is in dragging it out, not in finishing early.
Well, the railroad thing, for those that don't know, there's a talk about an old story. When the Pennsylvania Railroad, back when, you know, there were big passenger trains, Amtrak now uses Union Station here in Chicago. Okay, everything routes into Union Station, even stuff that probably shouldn't, but it's another story. So it routes on Union Station. That's where Amtrak is. So if you go south from Union Station, you go through, there was another Union Station of Englewood, down on the south side where the Rock Island, LaSalle Street Station where we are, again, a little bit of a history lesson. That was a station to the Rock Island, which went west, and the New York Central, obviously, that went east. So every night, the Broadway Limited would leave Pennsylvania Station, or leave, Union Station where the Pennsylvania was. They would leave at 6:25, and at the LaSalle Street Station, the New York, with the 20th Century Limited, would leave at 6:25. At 6:35, they would meet down at Union Station in Englewood, and the tracks actually crossed. So, I got a good one for you. Either one of you guys know that the intersection track, where you hear that clack, 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 when you go across another track, what's that thing called? Interesting name. Like the junction track?
I don't know.
It's called a frog, of all things. Why would you think it would be called a frog? Out of all the words in the dictionary,
I'm trying to think of why it would be called a frog.
That's what I'm saying. Out of all the words in the dictionary, that's probably the last one I'd pick, but the darn thing's called a frog. So if you ever run who wants to be a millionaire, and that's the last question, you owe it to me. Anyway.
I'll just call you.
So anyway, there's a junction track there. So the bottom line is, whenever something comes in, the Union Pacific comes in and swings south on those tracks, like for any kind of your cold unit trains, everything that come in from Montana or wherever they're at, North Dakota, they all have to come in, or the oil trains, they come in, they swing around south, and they have to cross this essentially junction track. That now, since the Rock Island's out of business, and so is the New York Central, is all the commuter lines for the Rock Island. And the commuter lines get the right of way. So all these unit trains, all these trains that come from Chicago have to stop and wait for the commuter lines to go forward. So there was this idea that we should just have a flyover. One of them should fly over the other one. It's called the Inglewood Flyover. Kevin, it's been 20 years they've been talking about this. 20, maybe more. And finally, in the last 3 or 4 years, they build the damn thing. Takes forever. They build it. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say in the 20 years they were talking about it, 80% of the trains that they were worried about waiting for the Rock Island are probably rerouted somewhere else to the new switching area in Joliet and those kinds of places to the point where you don't even need it. I'm convinced you didn't even need it. After all that time, you might as well have forgotten it. You know, it's insane how long this stuff takes. I did some work for somebody, if you take the, right now the easternmost commuter line from Chicago is the IC. Essentially goes from, Prudential Building, and it heads south. Obviously, the IC goes to New Orleans, but it stops at way down where it was a Governor's State. It stops out there, but it starts to move west. Well, there's cities that are east of that. Harvey, what's the other one? Dyer. There's all these little towns, Chicago Heights, that essentially have no commuter service, and these towns are in really, really bad shape. Really bad shape. A lot of people from the projects essentially were forced down there, and the taxes are high, houses are lousy, the police departments are lousy. I mean, it's like living in rural Mississippi, for God's sake. It's that bad. Well, somebody decides, well, if we had a commuter line down there, now the tracks, Kevin, are already there. If there was a commuter line down there, maybe we could pick some of these people could have a way to get downtown without having a car, without having to pay for parking, and it would help these areas. By the way, a spectacular idea. Like 12 years ago, they start having groups meeting about this thing. Kevin, the tracks are there. You could run a sample train. You probably have to get the signals together. You could run a sample train if you and I were in this room. I'm going to say March 15th, we could run a sample train, one in the morning, one at night, just to see. You don't need any stations. All these trains can load from the ground. You don't need any of that stuff. They've been meeting once or twice a year, making sure everybody's got their finger in the pie. I'm going to say for a decade. If there ever is a train there, it won't be for another decade. What are we doing? If we're going to do it, let's do it. Why can't? I mean, and we're talking about. Get a load of this. You know your South Side very well, but they're going to run trains on the Rock Island tracks all the way almost to Beverly, then back all the way over east, and then run them out. So the thing is probably going to be 20 miles longer than it has to be. If a train, you go, man, 15 miles. Just so they only have, they go on existing track. But it means they have the existing track. So why not start one? I mean, what are we waiting for? For somebody to get their finger in the pie? These are the projects we're talking about?
Well, hey, I work for the government now. Committees are what we do.
Yeah. I mean, but we are talking about, when you come out and say, this has been neglected for 20 years, you can't have the same system going forward as you did and neglected it for 20 years. Right? There has to be a change. And if you're going to speak to your people, you have to say, I mean, right now, if somebody were to say, well, let's raise the gas tax, I would say, unequivocally, you're another bleephead like Ronald Reagan. You had this huge tax decrease for rich people. Now you're gonna come back with regressive taxes for other people to make up for it because, by the way, you're broke. Which is exactly what happened in 1982. So we come back with a gas tax, an increase in the Social Security tax, increase in the Medicare tax. It's Ronald Reagan all over again. A bunch of crap, basically. where he ended up with a tax decrease on rich. Now, in Reagan's time, the tax decrease on rich people was much more needed because you were talking about a 70% tax, which was ridiculous. So yeah, I get it. But the point is, you're going to end up right back where you started. But at the very least, you should be able to say to these people paying the gas tax, well, at least going forward from now on, you can rest assured that money's going to go for roads. We can't even do that. Right? I mean, I would feel much better paying another nickel next time I filled up the Suburban per gallon if I at least knew it was going for roads. But you can't even assure me that that's going to happen.
Yeah, so you're screwed, Tom.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're just screwed.
That sums it up.
What was the
your tagline for today's show, Matty?
Matty, what was the
today's show? We're screwed.
What was the
or you could be a little more colorful and go with we're so screwed.
What was the cartoon characters where they'd sit there and a guy'd explain everything at the end of the cartoon and the guy'd go, I just think we're screwed. What was that guy? I think we're being screwed. Somebody comes out and gives them some long-winded explanation, and then the one little guy would go, I think we're being screwed. That was, I don't know who those guys were. Just Google that line, Matty. I think we're being screwed and see if the guy pops up. But,
you know, the speaking of cartoons and things like that, one of the things I was thinking last night was that the State of the Union would be perfect for Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the two of them sitting there, Mike Pence and Nancy. That's the one where he said something about we're gonna treat people better or something in Washington, and she like reached across, clapped his ears. Did you see that one spot?
I didn't notice that. I may have been looking at the computer at that point. I did for quite a while think that Speaker Pelosi was hypnotized.
Yeah,
then she moved.
Well, somebody was. I was listening on the radio. My two blocks back from the Tripoli. And they had somebody that had the account of how many people had checked their cell phones during the thing, and it had brought like other pieces of paper. They were checking off stuff on both sides of the aisle. It was so boring. But anyway,
I've always found it distracting with the vice president and the speaker behind the president. My whole life, it's almost makes it hard to watch.
Yeah, well,
I find that it draws me to them. I want to see what their reactions are to everything, you know, because you want to catch that moment where the look of on the face just gets, you know, really out of whack. It's absolutely the wrong thing that you want out of the State
right.
of the Union.
Right, that's what I mean.
You know, but I'm waiting for the vice president to pick his nose or something.
Right, that's what I mean. It's so distracting. You're just watching them the whole time, and you kind of miss out on the speech. And maybe that's the point. I don't know, but I've always found that distracting.
Well, Mike Pence could have been in a previous life. He could have been the model for the Sphinx. There's no expression at all. He just sits there and like he reminds me of a sushi chef. They stand there with no expression. But I think it's a good thing that we do stuff like this, though, but it's become this glad-handing. You know, I tell you what, if you put that speech together, other than some of the weird stuff in it, and some of the weird stuff he had in his, it's the exact same thing as Obama. It's a marketing speech for the country.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. It has nothing to... And if you went back
to... Sorry, I said it. I think there was nothing special about it. He delivered it fine. You know, that was okay. Had a couple of minor ad-libs. That was okay. But, I will say if you don't like Donald Trump, then you hated the speech. And if you love Donald Trump, you liked the speech. And then there's the scale in between. I did afterwards do a little toggling back and forth between Fox and MSNBC just to see what they were saying, and you know, it was, my God, they must have watched different speeches.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because of the way they were discussing it.
Well,
and that's fine. You know, that's to be expected. I just did that for amusement.
SP futures down 1.25. Dow futures down 12. NASDAQ, however, is up 4, so we're mixed. We'll probably end up up. We've been very strong. Fed's pouring money in. I bet we're up today. I'll bet you. I bet everybody one nickel will be up today. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Right there, right there. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Mel Weber. S&P futures still unchanged. We've got the Dow down 15. We got the NASDAQ up 7. So we're kind of moving in the right direction here. I was just digging through a whole bunch of my labor statistics numbers to see
if any of the ones that were given last night are accurate or not. Actually not too bad. Not like usual. They actually are fairly accurate. The over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 44. Now, these guys were up 1.5% yesterday. Now, 44.4%. FTSE down 3. Call that flat. CAC around down 8. Call that 0.1%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 29.1%. Shanghai up 33. That's 1.3%. These guys were closed a couple days this week, though. This up 33 number keeps hitting them. I'm going to check on that. Hang Seng up 59.2%. They can't be the same number every day. Oil, we've got oil down 16 cents, 53.50 a barrel. Brent down 22 cents, 61.76. So the spread there is now almost $8.22. And gold down a little bit again today, down 280, 13.16. With the dollar moving up, like it has in the last few days, gold's been weakening a little bit, but still hanging above 1,300. So not so bad. Maddie, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Compared to the last couple of days, we're off to a great start as far as the expressways are concerned. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Same could be said for the Eisenhower. Traffic building on the Stevenson, but no issues. Dan Ryan, there's some heavy traffic volumes, but no accidents to report. Bishop Ford, I-57, all looking good. We do have a crash down south, 159th at Dixie Highway. That's a crash with injuries that was reported about 15 minutes ago. So crews are arriving there to work on that. But everything else looking okay out there. We do have fog in the area, so give yourself a little bit of extra time. But it doesn't seem to be affecting the expressways as far as accidents are concerned, so that's good news. Weather today, the fog will clear later this morning, and we'll go up to an overcast high of 37. Not expecting ice as we reported yesterday. It's a few degrees warmer than they anticipated, and that turns to water. So it's wet out there, but not icy, not slippery. A little bit of fog and a pleasant day today with a high of 37. Right now it's foggy and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 55. Right now it's mostly clear and 50. In sports, don't look now, but the Blackhawks have won 5 straight, Chief. They rallied with a big third period to beat the Oilers on the road 6-2. The Hawks are just 3 points out of the final playoff spot.
They're doing way better on the road than they are at home.
It's interesting. Coyotes lost to the Predators 5-2. College Hoops, speaking of upsets and teams figuring it out, Illinois playing really good ball lately. They're not any threat to make the tournament after such a slow start, but they upset Michigan State, number 9 team in the country, down in Champaign last night, 79-74. No one wants to play the young Illini right now. And Loyola looking really good in the MVC. They are now atop the conference as they work toward making to the tournament for the second year in a row. They blew out Drake 86-64. Chief.
Well, digging through the numbers here, the actual labor numbers, that, this is the page that Carl sent me onto. I'm going to say you want to look at the end of 2016. Is that one? So he was inaugurated January 2017. So there were 253 million people, 253,538 in the civilian labor force. Okay? That's people over 16 that are not incarcerated. Whatever that means.
Or in the military.
Yeah. No.
No, or in the military. I'm pretty confident that that's part of it. It's part of the non-institutional labor force.
Civilian non-institutional population? Yes? I don't know.
Yeah.
You're probably right. Anyway, we've added to the workforce, we've added essentially 4.8 million people. So now it's 258,239. The people employed, we've gone from 153,337 to 156,694. So that's essentially, 151. So that number is actually 5.3 million, which is exactly what the president mentioned last night. Okay. So, he actually is right on his numbers for a change there. The unemployed, amount of unemployed people, have gone from 7.7 million to 6.5. So that number has dropped, okay? And the amount of people that are the other people, not working and not unemployed, the rest of the people that I guess should be doing something, maybe are, but we don't know what the hell they're doing. It's gone from 94,351 to 95,010. So I'm going to say, Kevin, for the first time in a while, most of the people entering the workforce actually have a job. So I'm going to, unlike...
Or are able to find one. because, you know, just the rough out math on that was we're growing about 200,000.
Well, which we have, we're basically,
and that's a normal number. You know, I've seen it 150,000. I've seen it 225. So 200 sounds about right.
Well, the actual, if you want to look at the numbers, the last however many years of the months of the Obama administration versus the first 25 months of the Trump administration, the amount of jobs being found is virtually exactly the same. But I will say this is there have been times, and I'll go back on this chart here to show you where a lot of this stuff ended or started. When I say this stuff, the dichotomy in the labor force, it really, I think, is still the bottom line problem in the country, Kevin. And I don't, to where we start fixing it, I mean, boy, you could start a million different places, but this 95 million people, we really only have out of, we've got almost, what would that be? 156 to 95. So really two-fifths, for lack of a better term, of people that should be working aren't. And the unemployed number is
well, right? Not necessarily, Tom, because there are lots of people who choose to be out for good reasons.
Well, a lot of them are retired.
Well, you get retired. Yeah. You get full-time students. You get, stay-at-home moms, stay-at-home dads. Anybody like that doesn't count as employed, and yet they're out by choice, and it's not, there's nothing wrong with the choice.
All right,
it's not like they're, you know, sitting on the couch eating potato chips and collecting unemployment or something like that. That's not, you know, that's not the whole number, of course. But it is a part of the number. One of the phenomena that I see is, when the economy is down, more people go back to school, whether it's for technical training or whether it's, you know, for to pursue a degree. When the economy is up and jobs are plentiful, especially like where I live, where there's still, you know, even with the RV industry slowing down, there's still a lot of good jobs that pay well available, that, you know, people say, okay, I'm going to take that and I'm going to work as many hours as I can. I don't have time for school.
Well, that's true, too. I guess where I'm going with this is my new technique here, Kevin. Instead of, is when I look at a chart that goes all the way back to 1984, I guess it's more of a table. Instead of trying to put any kind of, and I'm not accusing you of doing this, of some sort of a Democratic, Republican shade to it, I'm just going to talk about the numbers and where things, in my opinion, economically sort of went off the rails. And I'll do this in my head here. I had this all written down once, but I'll try and do it in my head without, well, whatever. From 1985 to 2000, okay, regardless of who the hell was in the White House, I don't even know, I don't care. We went from 178 million people to 212 in the potential labor market. So what is that? 22, that's 34 million people, correct?
I'll take your word for it. I can do the math.
We went from 107 million people employed to 136, so that's 29. So damn near everybody got a job. Right? Now, it's not the same people or whatever. Now, the part that were unemployed went from 8 million to almost 6, so I don't know, there was a bad time to a better time, I guess. So there are 2 million less people unemployed. But here's the third number, the people that are not in, that are in the labor force, not working for either good reasons, bad reasons, or whatever. Obviously, there's a college population, there's a high school population. It probably stays fairly steady. I don't know. Anyway, the number went from 85, 62.7 million to 69. So let's say it went up 7 million people. So the lion's share of the chunk of people that entered the world here, the working world, got a job. I'm going to say 85%. 80, 85, 90, somewhere in there. My math is not that strong this early. Now, from 2000 to 2015, again, that we can all remember who the presidents were, but without giving any sort of, just putting the numbers out there. We went from 212 million people to 250. So roughly the same, 38? The employed people went from 136 to 148. So only 12 million of the 30 some that entered the workforce demographically actually got a job. That's horrible, Kevin, compared to any other decade in history of this country, because you can get this table that goes way, way, way back. We started that with 69 million in this other group, and we ended with 2015, 93. So 24.5 million people entered this Never Never Land, and it hasn't come back since.
So here's my question then: what would you want to know about that population? You're getting a guy who's teaching stats this
right.
semester, so you know I'm totally locked
well,
in
that,
on this.
That makes you.
And what I say only about 10 times every class is almost always stats lead you to the next question.
What did Bill Murray say? I want to party with this guy.
The answer. So what are your next questions? Now you have the right number and you have the right data. So what do you want to know about it? And because you know the answers are going to be about 5 questions deep.
Well, absolutely.
Before we
absolutely.
Start figuring out hey, first of all, you know, we probably should not assume that something needs to be done about it. Maybe it's because everybody has opted out and they're all going to college and everybody's
well. First thing you want to know is, have the demographics changed that a lot of those people are over 65, retired, or even more foolishly, I might add, are over 55 or 52 in some stupid school system or police department or somebody has these people sitting on the couch getting a check at an age unheard of before. So what is the demographics of it? If it's just old people living longer and it's in 5 million of it is that or 8 million of it's that, Kevin, you just got to live with it, right? There's nothing to do about it.
You got to live with it, except that you need to say, is this, you know, with Social Security and Medicare, is that going to be a drain?
Well, right, the numbers match up.
So it's an important answer to have, even if the reason is pretty benign.
Is it people that have livings that aren't being counted more? You know, are there, you know, as David will say sometime, and I always disagree with him, that there's 3 million people, 5 million people living selling crap on eBay that aren't paying any taxes? Well, if that's the truth, you better figure out a way to get taxes out of them. You're right. There's a whole
or eBay or Amazon or whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, there's you know, I mean, you're running an international business out of your basement.
Right. So, and if you're paying taxes, that's fine. But I mean, but I guess you should also count the fact that you are working. Right. You should have a business.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be
which would never show up in the establishment survey and might show up in the household survey.
Well, it should, the household survey. Do you work? Yeah.
And unless somebody just doesn't want to admit it because they don't want
right.
to pay taxes.
Is it early retirees? Why, if people are living longer, are city and state employees retiring younger and younger? Well, that's stone cold ignorant in my mind. I mean, if you can't be a fireman on the roof of a place at age 59, which I can understand. I can easily understand that. It doesn't mean you can't drive the truck. Doesn't mean you can't be a dispatcher. Doesn't mean you should be home getting a check. Just me. I mean, it's not like I don't want somebody to have a nice life or recognize the fact that it was a tough job while they had it. I'm just saying the numbers don't match, Kevin. If everybody can't...
We still have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And so you always have that kind of a question sitting out there. And I think that's, you know, that's the somewhat deeper dive, and, you know, I certainly don't have time to do it, but we really need to do into those numbers to get some understanding. And I don't think it's conceptually difficult for, say, a news program, to do it. You know, you can keep it at a really basic level and start saying things like, well, this percentage is retirees, this percentage is, you know, is retirees above, over 65 or over 70, and this is the retirees that are 15 to 65, whatever the, you know, however you want to break it out. And you can also then saying these are the people who just can't get a job, can't qualify. I mean, we know 10% of the population, of the adult population, doesn't have a high school diploma. And we do know the unemployment statistics for people without a high school diploma. They're
yeah.
really high, and the wages are really low.
I'm gonna,
so, you know, is that a problem that we need to figure out how to address? Because, you know, my first advice to anybody in that situation would be get your GED and then maybe you're saying, hey, you know, how do you have time to get a GED if you have two kids and a full-time job, even if it's a crappy one? So now, you know, now we have a problem to solve. But now that is a problem that we can sink our teeth into, both as individuals or as not-for-profit organizations, as well as, you know, the government's part of the solution.
I'm going to make a stab, Kevin, and say, well, I think they're part of the solution because I think they're also part of the problem. Maybe I ask you this all the time, and there's no reason why you should remember it because I couldn't. It's the guy's name who wrote the Horseshoe of Despair. The guy from Washington Post. I don't know if he won some big prize for that, but if he didn't, he should have.
I don't know, and that's not what it's called either, because when I searched that, I can never find it. But I'll try. I remember the piece. It was It was fascinating and very well done.
Well, he described it as the Horseshoe of Despair, but it wasn't the title, so that's why you can't find it probably. Anyway, Kevin, he basically started in West Virginia. Excuse me, and went down to Mississippi. Across, you know, the South Belt and back up into, like, Arkansas. Basically describe, you know, the coal miners, the textile workers, those areas that don't really work anymore. Now, granted, you've got some auto plants and maybe there's been some improvement, I don't know. But basically outline people that are getting check upon check. Not, you know, these are not big checks, okay? People living in the hills, in a trailer, you know, that are two generations, maybe three, have never had a job. Now, I'm saying that 20 million of this 90-something, 20 to 25, is what is becoming a seriously permanent underclass where nobody even knows of somebody in the family who's had a job. And some checks are showing or something. I think that somehow or another, Kevin, that 15, 20 million people has to be targeted somehow. With either, you know, the young men and women, maybe get them the hell out of there to some sort of a, what do you want to call it? Like a general service program for a couple of years where they can get some college or high school education, where they learn somewhat of a trade. Maybe, you know, you get 6 weeks of basic training like you're in the Army, and then you can pile off into schools where you learn how to change the brakes on half tracks or tanks or something. There needs to be something very active to break this chain, I think. And I don't know what it is, but to me, government has to be the solution there somehow. We have been before in some of these areas. We were in the GI Bill. We were in other kinds of areas. I think that there's a 20 to 25 million number here that you and I don't want to understand, that we don't want to see here. It's not the people who manage to make money when they're 45 and are living at home, retired. Nobody cares about those people. They're fine.
One of the things to understand about poverty is that it's damn time consuming.
Poor,
because there's all these places you have to. You know, if you are on public assistance, you have to navigate on a regular basis. You have to navigate the welfare system, for lack of a better word. You have to. You know, if you want to go to school, you have to navigate the financial aid system, which is a real pain in the butt.
Oh yeah.
If you just need to get places, well, unless you're really, really well served by public transportation, you know, how many poor people have reliable transportation? If you have a car, and a lot do, but if you have a car, it's an old clunker and it's breaking down a lot. You know, and so you're dealing with that, and you know, it's kind of an exasperating thing. And you know, so how do we help there? And I think those are all areas where we need to address, and that's why it's so damned infuriating that they waste so much government money, because there isn't anything left over to do something genuinely effective for people who need it.
The biggest for me, Kevin, is and I think you have shown it. Oh, here's a shot. At an advanced age, you've managed to show that you're moving forward and not backward. You know, in life, you've got this new deal going, you're doing great. It takes a certain energy level. I mean, people can bitch and moan at every president we've ever had. They liked them, didn't like them. Someday we can say maybe him or her. But nobody can ever complain about the energy level any of these people have. I mean, some more than others. I mean, I think Roosevelt worked harder than Obama, but that's another story. And I don't know how hard, but I'm saying, but my point is, there's a certain, yes, you can probably get If you found somebody, there's people that clean, and don't let me take this the wrong way, but what Kevin just said is there's people that clean, say, all the buildings downtown at night. You could conceivably, if you got one of those jobs and you lived in Inglewood or the West Side areas that are pretty rough, other than safety getting to the train, you can walk 2 blocks to the Inglewood L and be downtown for 2 1/4. I mean, if all of a sudden you're in Appalachia and there's a job 20 miles away, all of a sudden now you need a car, you need this, you need that. It's a whole different program. I mean, some of the cities still are. I mean, even if you live in, you know, somewhere in the behind end of the Bronx in New York, you're 1 subway ride away from Manhattan at $2, right? So, I mean, there is a convenience to being in some of these areas and transportation being real cheap. Other areas, I don't know about that. What if you got to drive 40 miles from some small town in West Virginia to have a $10 an hour job? I don't know if you could pull that one off, Kevin. I mean, there's a lot of, like you said, there's logistics issues, there's everything here.
Yeah, and these are big problems, and we don't discuss those very well as a society.
Anyway, to finish my thought, because I'm running off my rails, is that the big waste of time last night, countrywide, the big waste of time is these people are put there for 2 years, 6 years, or 4 years, depending on who you're talking about, in the room last night. And if you waste 80% of your time doing God knows what crap, yelling back and forth at each other, tweeting, and I'm not just talking about him, if you waste all that, 80% of that time, if everybody decided that they all were going to get along, and if they're going to just work hard for all these bills, I don't think there's enough time in the day to set things right, Kevin. And if you pull 60% of the time out to fight with each other, what do you got left? I mean,
not much. I will say this one thing. Trump did cite some bipartisan efforts, some legislation that they did get through that has been substantial.
How good?
Now, there were only, in 2 years, there were only maybe half a dozen of them. But, you know, they were good, and it was, you know, it did help a little bit. It helped my psyche a little bit on there to say, I forgot about some of those. They did come together and work on some important things.
Just out of curiosity, is the bill that everybody, both sides, seems to think it was a quote, a great bill, the one about the drugs, does that make any progress? Did it help it at all?
Don't know. Need to see the stats on it.
The what?
Don't know if we're seeing a trend or not. A different trend.
It seems like we've gone from the oxycodone right into the fentanyl. I mean, I don't know if we're gaining or losing. I think we're still losing.
Well, and I wouldn't be surprised to learn that we are just playing legislative whack-a-mole with that. That, you know, you prioritize one, and then immediately they say, okay, if I can't sell that, I'll find something else to sell.
Yeah, I think that problem is way bigger when people think. I mean, we had a couple people on yesterday, and they talked about everything just being a big diversionary screen from people stealing all the money in this country. I don't know if that's true, but I will say this, Kevin, there's really no time here, even in whatever we're getting their news from the internet and from tweets and everything. I've yet to see any kind of a investigative story, and the amount of drugs in what people used to think were good suburbs in this area is dramatic. A lot of suicides, you know, a lot of kids, shall we say, there's more murders than you would think in areas that are not supposed to be murders. It's a much bigger story. The oxycodone the crystal meth in the small communities in places like Wisconsin, where you never would think there would be some, these rural areas have been decimated. I mean, this is a story that, talk about the greatest story never told. I mean, how many people have any idea? And I just know the tip of the iceberg from people that will send me something gay. It was just in northern Wisconsin, and, God, it seems like I went to the bar and half the people there were crystal meth idiots. Do we even understand the size of the problem? I don't think I do.
No, I don't think we do. Even remembering back to to drug culture when I was young, that may have been, you know, a start. It's not like it never existed in the first place. You and I have both seen Reefer Madness, darn it. We know when it all started. But
I saw it in my room.
But, good point.
Yeah.
But, seriously, it's, it's just, I don't know if it's tracked with the age group. I don't, you know, that would be another interesting topic, and to get some experts on there, and maybe we need our man Dr. Johnson on this, but I sort of suspect it's just tracked with the age group. And so now, and then once our age group has brought it along with it, then the follow-on age groups, you know, addiction is always a family affair.
So, pretty much.
You know, it tends to find its way, you know, into subsequent generations. And, you know, so maybe that's what we're looking at.
Well, Kevin, what are we looking at for Friday? What do you say we look at, we haven't talked at all about college basketball with all the other stuff going on. Well, now the seasons are pretty much officially over. So let's talk a little about college basketball on Friday. What do you say?
Yeah, we can do that. Although, as Batty mentioned, the Illini won that beat Michigan State last night. I'm, you know, looking for the Irish to see if they can get another road win against a fairly weak team in Miami, and then that'll bring me back.
Your buddy Beldo has this as a huge game tonight because one of his.
I think it's important because they're a young team that has talent, and they've got all these young guys who have had, as individuals, good games on occasion, and they need to have more than one guy have a good game at the same time.
Well, Beldo's got one of his wacky guys on the internet. Is it, who are all these people that have all these rating systems? And one of them, is it Massey? Masters? Somebody's got this NCAA computer thing where they'll tell you who's going to win every game. So they got the Irish losing tonight. So if we could turn this one around on this guy's computer, all of a sudden their prediction might be 17 wins instead of 15. So it's a big game because it's on this guy's computer. You didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a big game because, the NIT is on the line.
Well, pretty much. S&P futures down 250, Dow futures down 11. NASDAQ futures up 2. Come back, with Miss Audrey Johnson.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN at PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. A quiet morning. S&P futures down $1.25. Dow futures now up 2. NASDAQ futures up 5. Backed by popular demand, we have Audrey Johnson from Home Source Realty. Audrey, how are you?
Good morning. Just fine.
You're up in no ice this morning. We lucked out, eh?
Yeah. It was good. It was ice for a while, melted off here, so looks like we dodged a bullet then. Everybody should be fine, at least in that commute in this morning.
Yeah, because it looked like it was going to be bad. They never quite got cold enough. And it was pouring last night by us. And, finally got the whole area, but I never really saw any ice pellets, so that's a good thing.
It's another fun day in Chicago weather.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's after the 22...
All the hype on the weather channels for you know, everybody out stocking up on, you know, the last loaf of bread just in case, and turned out to be for nothing.
Well, you know how desperate that was? My buddies from the Fed actually canceled a caucus due to the weather.
Oh, due to the supposed weather,
they're
right?
Supposed, that really sucks. They are really getting too old for me. I got to go find some younger group.
Well, yeah, it's you could tell though this. I don't know if it's good news or bad news. If the weather occupies about 30% of the nightly broadcast, you know, with some kind of drama going on, you know. It's,
oh yeah. Well, they
I
don't
guess it's a good thing. I mean, nothing else horrible is going on in the world.
So the
as long as it's not raining, the dog's happy. That's all that matters.
That's true.
Oh yeah. My dogs were not happy at all. Not at all last night.
Well, we used to
treat wet beach towels piled up by the front door because, you know, God forbid they get wet paws.
This is how the world is going. The I used to just send an email out to the gang over at the Fed, and I'd say, what night are we caucusing this week? And three guys, you know, come back Tuesday, Wednesday, and we'd find a spot. It'd always just be, you know, who wants to go have a drink on Tuesday or Wednesday, basically. Well, now the pitter-patter back and forth of all these stupid things where you get the thing now to add to your calendar. So you get the calendar, name in the night where you're going to stop for a beer. I mean, what are we doing? And then you get the stupid little pop-up. Remember tonight you're stopping for a beer with the people at the Fed? I mean, ever
well,
since...
Well, tell you, you're assuming that maybe you're just not busy enough where you need to add this into your calendar. I mean, if you're a really busy person, you need a constant reminder of where you're supposed to be.
Well, ever since we started doing that, every single one has been canceled.
Oh, well, see, they're too busy. They can't come through the things they scheduled. And we're going to have to get you more things scheduled.
So I come in this morning, and what is there? Some stupid note to stop for drinks last night with the people from the Fed that got canceled. So tell me how this is progress.
Can I just say that I don't think any of that group needs a reminder where they're going out drinking, but
I don't
that's
think so
just
either.
My view.
How do we manage to do this? We had to call somebody's house and got their mother and said, tell Joe to meet, we're all meeting at such and such a bar at 9. Okay. Were we just that much better?
It really was amazing.
Because it's a very simple reason. Because unfortunately, us women have to organize most lives, and unfortunately for a lot of us, our moms aren't around to do it anymore. So you guys are on your own, and look what happened.
How do we manage?
I think she's right.
Maddie, how do we manage to always have 8 people for basketball, 10 people for softball, and find somebody to drink with before we had all these conveniences? We just
your
must
moms
have been...
gave you the message, I'm telling you.
Well, whatever. But anyway. So what? How's things in the real estate world, in the mortgage world, and whatever? What's going on? What seems like,
well,
there's some business...
You know, after the Super Bowl, you know, that's because... as most people know, the Super Bowl was the unofficial start of real estate season. You know, the guys are finally done watching football. We get up off the couch and they're like, okay, let's go out and look for a house. So, it's actually been a very consistent winter. Despite the end of the bad weather, it's been poking along. And now, since we've had that drop in interest rates in the last couple of weeks, businesses really, opened up. But again, what, people are bumping into the, entry-level homes and mid-tier homes is there's still not enough inventory to meet demand out there.
The is the, and on one hand, we actually were talking about this last night, because we're talking about somebody who was remodeling his home. And you and I have talked about, let's put it this way, the older people, I'm trying to make a connection here that isn't exactly a connection, but people used to always keep their home impeccably. A lot of retired people in some of these areas have homes now that have, I'll use the term deferred maintenance, because maybe they didn't make as much in the bank as they did and wanted to on their, I mean, somebody who had, you know, $300,000-$400,000 in the bank making zero interest versus 3% over a period of 8 years, it becomes a lot of money. So You're running into a lot of deferred maintenance on some of these homes. Not that they're bad places or anything, they just, somebody's got to catch it all up. And then the young people that move in now really want everything move in ready. They're not coming with, you know, a big basket of tools like I do, because that's just my generation knows how to do stuff and doesn't mind. You know, oh yeah, I got to replace a few windows, gives me something to do for a few months. You know, is the inventory matching the quality of the inventory or the condition it's in matching the demand?
No, that's part of it too, is that, that's right, and I think it's, an HGTV hangover where everybody thinks that a house is just supposed to be, a perfect walk-in entity that where you don't have to do anything. And I think several factors are affecting that. Yes, people don't have the skills, I shouldn't say all of them. I mean, a lot of my clients do, a lot of them are in the trades, and, they do have the ability to fix things up. A lot of it is time, too. People don't have time. They're coming from apartments. They didn't inherit tools. And you have to, the simple fact of how we grew up with our parents and grandparents in the neighborhood and people showing you how to do things. A lot of, like, Maddie's generation, people are moved across the country. They moved away from family. And as simple as it sounds, a lot of the time that you just spent with your mom or dad or learning how to fix things, that didn't happen for a lot of kids. You know, a lot of the focus has been different, just growing up. So it going away from that, but it's true. And a lot of these people where, again, families moved away, there's nobody to help a lot of these people as they age to keep a residence up. So therefore you go in and you've got things that are dated or even, just falling apart because a lot of these, the elderly have really, no backup or no one to help them. And some of the homes, not only is it sad for their lives, but it's also been tough on the quality of the housing stock.
Well, I was talking to our buddy, he's been a contributor to the show a couple times, Butcher Al, last night. He lives in a home, North Shore, but evidently it's not one of the, I've never been there. But he was saying it's somewhat like a flipper home in the area. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he goes, people moved from Chicago when they had a couple of kids, and all of a sudden they either the schools got, they didn't like the school or it got expensive or whatever. So the people built the place. And then for the next 20 years, you essentially had five different owners that came in with the intention of moving into that area, buying a home, getting the kids out of, I guess they go to New Trier, someplace, but a really good school. You're essentially buying into the area that you could care less about the area. You just want the kids going to the school. And he goes, I'm a block away from the grammar school, a block and a half away from the middle school, and shortcut ride to the high school. He says, it's absolutely perfect for families to have three or four kids or two or whatever it is that want their kids going to the school where they're already paying for through their taxes. So every one of these families, as soon as they got the kids out of school, they all left. But nobody had any idea that they were going to spend, you know, 30 years in this house. So nobody really did anything. He says, so I move in, I've already replaced all the windows, replaced the roof. He goes, I'm up to $200,000 into this place. Because we plan on making it
are like real home. Do you see a lot of that going on, or is he kind of unusual in more ways than one?
I don't see people moving short term. That's kind of an interesting comment on society also. But usually the first thing a couple will ask is, you know, I want this school district, you know, or a lot of them will say, I only want to be in X school district, whether it's, you know, Nutrier, Hinsdale, Frankfort, you know, Lincoln Way, whatever, you know, Carl Sandburg out here. So people have a preference because they're shopping it. You know, if you're in Chicago, a lot of people send their kids to private school. They're sending the Latin, they're sending the Parker. Well, not all the people have the wherewithal to do that. So they're just going to move somewhere where the school scores are what they're going to pay to live for.
Well, if you're going to pay $10,000 or $20,000 in taxes, you'd much rather have your kid going to a really good high school than paying another $20,000 to go to high school.
Well, exactly. And also, even if you don't have kids, you're going to try and buy into a good school district, so it also helps your resale value.
Well, that's true too. So what do you?
I never thought about that, but that makes perfect sense.
Well, that's why. I mean, if Maddie, don't shake over there. If you pop out three kids and they're age, you know, 14, 16, and 18, let's just say the life is much better for your pocketbook if you're going to Lincoln Way or Nutrier than if you're going to Latin.
Yes, not even close.
Well, yeah. Well, you know what? Even the Catholic grammar schools aren't cheap. I don't know how parents do it when they have two, three, or four kids and they're paying, you know, $6,000 to $10,000 a year per kid to go to school. I don't know how they do it.
I don't get it either. I mean, the South Side, it's still so. South Side schools, like where I grew up, St. John Fisher, a lot of it's a very blue collar area. There's people that have, how can I say this politically correctly, jobs where they could live in areas a lot nicer than that, let's put it that way. Can't wait to go back there. They move back in some of these smaller homes so the kids have the school and there's other kids on the block to play with, and you don't have any, they want no part of this. Every single time the kid does anything, you got to get in the car and drive them there, that people are used to in the suburbs. They drive the kid to school every day. I mean, they don't want, I'm not saying they're right or wrong, or which upbringing is better or worse. They just don't want it. They want the kid to be able to tell your kid in the second grade, there's a school two blocks away, go get it. Right? I mean, they come home for lunch and all, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's a great idea. Almost all of us grew up like that. And I think people like that idea, and I think there is a tendency to go towards that. I think the problem is nobody lets their kid walk anywhere or play anywhere by themselves anymore anyway, because everybody's afraid their kids are going to get kidnapped. But it's just the day of wandering to the park by yourself and hoping to meet your friends. But no, I understand exactly what you mean. And yeah, because kids are so car dependent and being driven everywhere that it's, it also doesn't foster what I think the younger generation is looking for, again, is a neighborhood and being connected with your neighbors and your friends, which a lot of these communities are trying to foster. And it's something that slipped away from people, I think, in the last maybe generation and a half. And I think people are realizing that between not connecting in your neighborhood and only connecting on social media, you're really losing a good chunk of your humanness and what makes life worth living.
Well, the same kids that were the ones that always made sure there were 10 people there for basketball are the guys that become senators or the ladies, right? somebody has to take charge at every level or do a little something extra. You know, I'm not saying it was better or worse. It's just when somebody says I took Joe to a play date, Maddie, I don't know, did you play? You obviously played Pee Wee League and Little League baseball. My mom came to every game. Never once would I ride with her. There's no way I would have done that.
Well, that's too embarrassing.
That's way too embarrassing. She was okay. She was there. And everybody liked everybody else's mom and dad that came. But you never rode with them. That was way too.
Yeah, my mom worked.
Well.
There was no choice. We weren't riding with her anywhere.
Well, my mom would show up at 6:30. All our games were late. You know, so she'd show up at 6:30. She never missed a softball game we played down south. And,
of course, typical, I'll go on a limb here, another odds here, typical female, she shows up one day and starts telling me that I made the lineup all wrong. I said, man, do you know anything about softball? No, I just think you should have your brother bat in higher in the order. I'm like, okay.
You want to make out the order? Gloria wasn't wrong about too much. She was usually right in there.
Probably. But anyway, so tell us about the real estate bid. Are any of the deregulations we heard about the president saying last night, have any of those made them down to your area? Plus, we don't have that much time, but I want to hit you up on some serious stuff here, because we had Jim Grant talk the other day regarding he was talking about the Fed being broke, technically insolvent because of how much money they've lost on these mortgages. And you've done not a lot, but you've had some people that have foreclosures that you've helped out with and so forth. Does anybody ever, how is that, what if the Fed owns one of these mortgages? The banks, I mean, I know you've complained on many occasions how it takes forever to finish one of these things, to essentially close on a foreclosure. Is this some mortgage?
No, it's not foreclosure. Foreclosures are easy. Once it gets to a foreclosure, that's not a problem because we know where they're going at the bank. And it still is getting a short sale done, which is different than a foreclosure. And the short sales are still something that, you're looking at 4 months to a year, year and a half before you even find out if you're going to get it at your price. It blows my mind that policy has never been fixed, and it's just such a laborious, time-consuming policy. I try not to do them anymore if I don't have to.
Well, I guess that's what my question is. Are the banks or the people who are doing that on the other end, the people you're dealing with, it always seems like it's going to be a bank, but that's just what you tell me, are they just milking the crap out of somebody else's mortgage to do this service, and is it their attorney, and they're just making a fortune on this whole mess to delay it that long? It seems like at the end of the day, whenever you finally get, come to the end of one of these things, it's not something that couldn't have been done in a month if they wanted to.
It's nothing that could have been done in a week, and the problem with the procedure, it was born in a time when nobody knew what was happening, and under all these years, a very easy fix could be applied to short sales. The difference with the short sale, it means that somebody who owns their house is simply coming to the closing table. They want to sell their house, and they don't have enough equity in the house to pay off their mortgage. So they have to get permission from the bank and any lien holders to sell it for the new adjusted lower sale price. And instead of getting an established price up front from the bank, saying, okay, we can't make our mortgage, we're supposed to pay you back $200, but the house is only worth $150. Will you take $150 if we get it? That doesn't happen up front. They go to the home seller and a home buyer, and they say, well, somebody wants to buy the house for $140, and the seller says yes, even though technically they have no authority anymore because they're behind, their arrears are going to lose the house. So now it will take from there to wind its way through the clerks and the staff and maybe in different states and maybe a different country, and it will take months and months of submitting mountains of paperwork before it even gets to the possibility that they may grant a home seller short sale status and then maybe agree to that price after the bank does the appraisal at the end of the process.
Are the banks just running up the tab for whoever the poor?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think it's just absolutely ridiculously poor thought out process that nobody's bothered to address since the need has tapered off as we've recovered from the recession.
Well, imagine for an instant that you've got one of these homes and it's one of the mortgages that say the Fed has bought up. Fed probably doesn't even know they bought it up, or anybody at the Fed. But now that's where it is. How long does it take for anybody even finds a damn thing?
I have nothing to do with that, so I couldn't even tell you. You know exactly what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the lien holder. So if it's Chase Bank or whoever it is, Wells Fargo, we're dealing with that person. We're not dealing with the Fed or anybody. We're just dealing with the bank.
But I mean, the chances of Wells Fargo actually owning the mortgage are what, 20%? It's probably somebody else.
Well, yeah, but who knows who they sold it off to? It could just be a different bank.
Okay, but my saying is it in the Wells Fargo's best interest to charge people by the hour for a year and make it, and have a $30,000 fee that say the mortgage is 160. You find somebody to pay 150. What is the Fed actually going to get from Wells Fargo? 120? Is Wells Fargo going to steal another 30 for legal and time to for messing with you for a year?
I don't know. My money goes somewhere, but
do you ever find out?
Horrible! It's a ridiculous process. It's never been actually just addressed. And why does a process in this day and age still have to be? A lot of times, people just want faxes. They don't even want emails or texts. So you're dealing with people that constantly lose packages of information that the poor seller might take weeks or months to put together, and they go, oh, we never got it. You have to send it again.
See, you
never. It's a ridiculous process.
Do you ever find out, except by accident, who the actual owner of the damn mortgage is?
Well, we deal directly with the bank. So whoever, what bank we're dealing with, that's who we assume the mortgage is
right.
dealing with.
Even though we all know that 80% of them have been sold overseas or to the Fed or other places.
We only deal with the name we have.
Okay, that makes sense. It's just weird. I mean, isn't it? do you notify the IRS in this whole mess?
I don't do anything. I'm just trying to make the deal happen.
I know.
Not in my pay grade.
Well, let's put it this way. One thing that it strikes me, and it's not just because, you know, you're a contributor to the show and a serious, significant other, it seems to me that you're doing more and more of other people's jobs over the years. Is that a fair statement, or is that just me being...
Real estate has become so complicated, as many of our jobs have been, you know, being a broker, being a money manager, the regulation and the paperwork piled on top of all of us on our jobs has just expanded, and I don't think anybody in any field like that sees anything coming to a halt in that direction. It's becoming more complicated, more onerous to...
Has it made it better or just a bigger pain in the ass?
I think everybody can answer that.
So the idea, right, what I'm getting to, it used to be, I remember when I closed on my place in Beverly years ago, and of course, my buddy Doc, you know Doc, Betty, not Dr. J, Doc, of course, is the most impatient guy on earth. You know, he's going to do the closing for me, and he'll never charge me for anything, right? So we show up, and the guy who's buying the place, well, him and his wife, he's an attorney, she's an attorney, and they bring the father to represent him, who's an attorney. So Doc's like, what the hell? This kid doesn't belong
seriously
in a poker
game. Attorney overkill.
Yeah, so Doc goes, he leans over and goes, this kid doesn't belong in a poker game, much less with a law degree. he says, make sure you bring a couple $100 in case something screws up in there and somebody added up wrong. You get at least, you know, we're off by a few cents, you can give him cash. Okay. Well, now what? That's illegal, Ed?
No cash. No. Wire transfers, and then you have to be careful so that everybody has disclaimers, and attorneys will call you and say, do not wire anything unless you get, like, the secret password from me, because your wiring used to be bring your certified checks in. Now it's like have your wire done, but the wires get hacked and hijacked, and so that's one of the big scams going on. So you've got to make sure your money doesn't get stolen when you finally get stolen.
So, Maddie, if there's a big bitch about the washing machine, and you say, okay, the damn thing doesn't work here, can I give you $200? It's illegal now.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
No. I mean, and the people who make these rules, you wonder where the hell they're all coming from. And now, of course, the wire is more dangerous than the check or the cash, even though you got to wire everything.
Wiring, sending money online is way more dangerous than a check or cash in every possible way.
Isn't that special?
But they want to track it. That's all it is.
Well, can't you just put down a piece of paper, $200 cash? Well, that's tracked. Who needs to know this stuff?
That's the question.
So we're just telling you how it is. We're not exploiting you. We're just telling you what's happening.
All right, give us
Manny and I are just bringing you into the real world here.
Oh, God. Well,
we're trying our best, right?
Speaking of real world, how about giving us a shameless plug?
Okay, everybody looking to buy or sell property this spring? You can either contact me at AudreyJohnson@realtor.com or direct at my cell, 708-846-6494.
Thank you very much. Obviously, very good as usual. SP futures up a whole quarter. Dow futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 11. We'll come back and talk to markets. Mr. Frank Fahey.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Frank Fay here to talk markets. I guess a little bit of the president's speech. S&P futures up one now. Dow futures up 14. Nasdaq futures up 14. So we're kind of up across the board as we would have, I'm expecting because the amount of money the Fed's pouring into this thing. I'm looking to see how I get my people a little longer today, much as I think that that's the wrong way to go here, but you gotta roll, you gotta play the cards you were dealt, as they say. Over in Europe, DAX up down 43. 0.4%, FTSE down 3, call that flat. CAC around down 7, call that flat. So not big movements overseas and the speech last night. Nikkei up 29.1%, Hang Seng up 59.2%. We got oil, just a little bit of a movement down 16 cents, Brent down 15 cents. The spread is now, $8.30.
Natural gas up 2 cents, 269. Again, very low. Evidently, the predictions are this winter is just going to kind of trail off here. We're not going to have any more real heavy cold weather. We'll see. RBOB is $1.41. Home heating oil is $1.89. Gold is down a little bit as the dollar has strengthened up a little bit. It's down $1.20. Silver down 8 cents. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. For whatever reason, Chief, we're relatively quiet this morning for a foggy Wednesday morning.
Everybody stayed up and watched the speech.
Well, that could be, and I think a lot of people were expecting the ice storm, and maybe they decided they were going to work from home today to avoid it, and it never really came. And so we have good traffic conditions for the most part. Like I said, low visibility in some areas because of the fog, but no accidents to report. Normal traffic volumes on the Kennedy, in fact, slightly better than normal. Eisenhower is probably our slowest moving expressway, but no accidents to report. Traffic building on the Stevenson, nothing out of the ordinary there. Same could be said for the Dan Ryan and the Bishop Ford. I-57 is looking good. Suburban tollways have been quiet all morning. Like I said, off to a great start. One issue is a crash that happened earlier this morning. We mentioned last hour. It was a crash with injuries, so a significant crash on 159th at Dixie Highway down south that is causing issues as crews continue to work on that down on that scene. We also had an earlier crash up in Libertyville. That's all clear. And we have a disabled vehicle on the North Shore, Almond Road at Casey Road. But very quiet out there, but there is fog in the area, so keep that in mind. Weather today, the fog will clear and give way to cloudy skies and a very pleasant high for February of 37 degrees. Right now, it is overcast, foggy, and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine today with a high of 55. Right now, it's mostly clear and 51. In sports, the Blackhawks all of a sudden look like a playoff contender. They were one of the worst teams in the NHL. Now they're just 3 points out of a playoff spot in the West. After winning their fifth straight, they beat Edmonton last night on the road 6-2. So look out for the Hawks. Coyotes lost to the Predators 5-2. College hoops, Illinois with an upset win over number 9 Michigan State down in Champaign 79-74. Loyola is atop the Missouri Valley looking to make a repeat performance and make the tournament 2 years in a row. They blew out Drake last night 86-64. Chief.
The General Motors earnings, $1.43 versus $1.22 expected. And we also have fourth quarter productivity up 1.3% versus 1.6 estimated. So a lot of these fourth quarter numbers with the labor and everything, as Carl mentioned yesterday, a lot of adjustments into those numbers.
So we got a question here for you and Frank, and Frank is on. Welcome, Frank.
Hey.
This is from DP on Twitter. He says, opinion on taxing retirement income in Illinois. Watch all the retired public employees move to Florida, Texas, Nevada, etc. If public pensioners do move, shouldn't Illinois still tax their benefits since they are the reason for the tax? Apparently, the group is calling for a hike to the state's individual income tax rate to 5.95% from 4.95%. This is from the Tribune now. Its plan also calls for starting to tax both retirement income and some consumer services. He's wondering if when they flee, do they still have to pay that tax, or is it the burden completely gone?
That's a good question. One thing
that's for a lawyer / CPA. I have no idea.
Exiting a state to another state, especially if you have money, is fairly difficult to do. The new state welcomes you. The other state doesn't want to let you go that quick. We know some people on the trading floor that exited to Florida, and Illinois was not all that happy to let them go. I mean, you got to go get your driver's license. You got to get all kinds of stuff in the new state before you can prove you're out of the old one, aren't you, Frank? It's a big deal.
Oh, definitely. And I know, for example, the move to Indiana entails taxation of retirement income.
Yeah, so not being retired, this is kind of a new one on me, which I hate to admit, but I'm always honest. You're telling me that if I get a policeman's pension in Illinois, I don't have to pay state tax on it?
That would be an outrage.
Yeah.
I know Social Security is not taxable
in
Illinois.
Well, it's not taxable in the federal either.
David
it's taxable in Indiana, though.
Yeah, David.
I'm pretty sure.
David writes in, we might want to research this, which is kind of what we're talking about here. He says, because I think at least for some state pensions, which state I don't know, that the state of origin gets their cut when the checks go out.
Yeah, I'm thinking they might.
Which would make sense.
You know what we could do is make is it just like the, you know, you can't work for the city if you don't live in the city. Maybe you can't get a retirement check from Illinois or the city if you leave.
I'm for that. I mean, I don't know if
that, yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know what the like what the laws say about that, but I'm for it.
Yeah, I just and so we're sending all this money down. That's why, you know, when Florida gives you the story about how they don't have much of a tax or these other places, well, of course you don't. Everybody moves down there and gets money for nothing. From other places. Right?
And the chicks for free.
Yeah. Money, was it money for nothing and your chicks for free? Is that what that's?
That's right. This one, Chief, talking regulations with Odd. I contend the single biggest contributor to the current economy is nothing more than positive sentiment from Donald Trump that he's generating by getting government out of the way of the entrepreneur class. When the government's boot is on your throat, whether it's a left boot or a right boot, it is of no consequence.
He's absolutely right, except I don't think any of the stuff has made it down to, you know what, in full disclosure, and I think people can criticize me all they want, but please don't criticize me for not being honest, because I am. I will say in my business, that whole ridiculous fiduciary thing coming out of the Labor Department has died under Trump, and I thank him for that. That was just an insane way to go. But I don't think a lot of it, here's my concern with this. I mean, again, I always try and play, and that's why Frank and I always argue about stuff. The whole world is three-dimensional chess. Okay? If you have zero regulation where you should have, okay, like with the big banks and the Fed is asleep and the controller currency is asleep and you don't realize they're doing off-balance sheet things in 2005, 6, 7, and they blow up and you decide you're going to have regulation. Well, the trick is to have the regulation on what blew you up last time and what is liable to blow you up next time. To double the regulation on the stuff that had nothing to do with any of it, or triple that regulation, all you do is bury the little guy to where all of a sudden the regular bank that's never had a problem giving a car loan in its life, now for every clerk or clerk, every employee of the bank that dishes out a car loan, you got two people from the Fed over each shoulder making sure that that application for the car loan is no longer 3 pages, it's 33 pages and everything else, to the point where banks don't give car loans anymore, they all go to the dealer. To have that sort of regulation, everybody knows, whoever wrote in, I don't think that any of that, I don't think it's worked it down to those places. So what ends up happening, you know, if a Trump comes in, says we don't want any of these regulations, well, the smaller banks and the smaller brokerage firms are already dead. I mean, we hang in there because we're good and because I'm stubborn. And because, and by the way, now we're growing like a weed, so that part's good. Anybody who is smart would have said, God, why don't I just fold this up and go work for Merrill Lynch? But I'm more stubborn than smart. But none of the stuff that people are talking about on this big level have made it down to Audrey having a pain in the ass closing for ridiculous reasons and having to try and get a wire transfer for $50 at 5 o'clock in the afternoon or the stuff that is worked down to us. You know, the fact that, I mean, I'm all of a sudden responsible for a client I just met's money laundering activity for the last decade. Why? I have nothing to do with the guy from 10 years ago. And if he's money laundering in Europe, how the hell am I supposed to know? That's why I pay taxes, for somebody else to figure that out. That's what police are for. I mean,
how much of these new laws or regulations are the result of the big companies writing them? Misdirection, right, to put the onus on little guys like you and me.
Yeah, so
I think all of them, indirectly or directly, whether it's, you know, a lobbyist, you know, nudging it, or them actually writing it, their lawyers actually writing it. I think it's almost all of litigation these days.
Well, yeah, and the idea that that somehow I can't really, I mean, obviously I'm on radio, so I can't tweet anywhere. Not that I'm a big tweet guy, but I can't tweet anywhere. I'm not somebody who thinks my last thought walking out of the Tripoli at 8 o'clock at night and the world needs to hear. First of all, that's insane, but that's just me. But I mean, the idea that now for me, that's communication to clients and I need a third party person to review all this stuff, yet the president can do it all day long.
But Frank makes a great point in that, you know, we're talking about the entrepreneurial class and you're talking about small brokerage firms. They're the ones that are getting killed.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And we yell at the government about it but we're not really yelling at the true cause. It's the big corporations, the big firms that want us killed.
Right.
And they're influencing the government to kill us. And
that happened to us as market makers, Tom.
Yep.
And yet the small-minded people, you know, which I'll put myself in that category, you instantly think of, well, screw this party or that party in the government, but it's really the big company.
But they're getting the bureaucrat to write the rule. They're not writing it.
But they're, yeah.
They bought the bureaucrat.
The bureaucrat's an employee.
Right. Well, therein lies the rub. I mean, does the ICC in Illinois, have they reached the point where they're working for Commonwealth Edison? I mean, really? I mean, are they the loyal opposition to their again Commonwealth Edison, where they say we got to pay our senior executive $10 million? And they say no, five's plenty. You're not counting the other five towards an expense that we're going to raise people's rates on, or they just wear them down. So what I'm saying is. On the one hand, I'd love to see regulations cut back to normal levels. On the other hand, if you're big and Citigroup, now that, you know, 5,000 other small banks are out of business, now we're going to drop the regulations back down. What have you just done? You've allowed Citigroup to knock out half their competition, and now you're going easy on them. When they were the problem from the get-go.
Exactly right. And they're going to pay you in your other pocket to now take the regulation down.
Right.
Now that they've eliminated everybody else.
Maybe. And you can offload work on them.
It's like a never-ending cycle.
It's a good deal for a bureaucrat.
But the idea is, now, what everybody sort of, I mean, I guess, I don't know, what I'm seeing here is at the end of the day, Citigroup doesn't even have to be a bank. They don't even have to make loans. They don't have to do it. They still want to do their trading and all the stuff that gives you basically, you know, but it feels like you're taking Viagra. I mean, they want to do all that stuff, but they don't really want to be a regular. They don't want to give you a car loan, Maddie. They don't want to do any of that kind of stuff. They want you to give them their money for zero dough. They want to give you a credit card for 24%. And they want to charge you to take money out of it. They don't want to charge you fees. There's fees. Anybody who doesn't have $2,500 in an account probably is paying fees, right? I'm going to say that 75% of all checking accounts do not have more than $2,500 in it. So there's fees for what? 75% of the population? Are we the only people doing this math? Trump's not.
I don't know if that's accurate, by the way. I know for business accounts it is. You have to have a minimum. For most checking accounts, though, you don't have to have a minimum. Now, you'll get penalized if you overdraft or ATM fees and things like that. So if you want to count that as fees, then you're right. But at Chase or whatever, I don't have to have a minimum in my checking account.
We had, when we started PTI in 1991, my brother Dan, who's very good at these sorts of things, went over to Harris Bank.
Are you talking about for the business account or for personal accounts?
I'm saying he went over to the bank and he said, we're going to put the business account here and we're going to have, in those days, the direct deposit was fairly new. He says, I'll tell you what, we'll put direct deposit, everybody in the place, and we had, you know, whatever, 10 people, is gonna bring their personal account over here. We never want to have a fee anywhere. And they said, you got that deal. All of a sudden, 5 years ago, I get this thing in the mail, by the way, if you're less than $5,000, charge you $15 a month. And I'm like, where did that come from? They just were nagging on everything. And,
I would pull my money from that bank so fast. Yeah, screw that.
Because
I've never had to pay a minimum fee for a personal
checking account. I bet you're somewhat grandfathered in on the one you brought in. It's all over the place.
Which is possible. I've been banking with the same guys for 15 years.
Or they'll send a thing to you in the mail, and if you really bitch at them, they'll back off it because they don't want you to leave or something. But I'm telling you, this stuff is being lobbed all over the place.
Now, you know, in your 20s, when you well, and some people later in life, when you don't balance your checkbook and you get an overdraft, then they hit you with a fee and you gotta obviously pay the penalty. Or, you know, God forbid you use an out of network ATM, then you got to pay the ATM fee on the spot, and then they charge you another $5 as a non-network ATM fee. So that's a fee in its own right.
Well, we had the Stocks and Jocks accounts over at Lakeside. So one day, I don't know what happened, but I didn't have the thing right. Of course, I give our buddy Thomas a check, and I don't know what he doesn't cash it. So all of a sudden, like a year later, he cashes the thing. And it shouldn't matter, right? I mean, I had the bleep up, and all of a sudden, Fanny from Lakeside calls me up and says, "Hey, you're like, you know, $50 over. Bring over the $50," which I did. You know, they didn't charge me anything. I mean, that's the difference between having a banker that, you know, knows you and cares about you.
A personal, yeah, that's a personal touch, which is nice.
Hey, what are you doing? If you get out of ad, bring over to $50. Okay.
By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks Letter N Jocks. Joe Casey writes in, the most telling part of the State of the Union was how the ladies in white refused to applaud when Trump called for ending late-term abortion. A horrible look for the Democrats.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of
those. I didn't watch. Did that actually happen?
Yeah.
That reminds me, in my Catholic youth, growing up as the son of a faculty member, that most heated arguments were about save the wife or save the child.
Yep.
And it's the same stuff, and this is what those laws are about. And we are not having an honest discussion on it on either side.
I will, reach out on this one. I will opine that the thing that's happened, and Kevin kind of brought it up, obviously a lot of Catholic people are anti-abortion, which, to be perfectly blunt, I am, but I also think that it does not, it's not a, it should be a secular issue.
Yeah, it's a topic I couldn't care less about.
But it should be a secular issue. I mean, if somebody in our religion,
I think,
considered wrong.
I think people should be able to do whatever they want.
Okay, but here's the rub, Matty. What's happening is when the abortion rights came in what, 74, whatever the hell it was, medical science has changed so dramatically that when you start talking about babies after 6 months, they're viable. I mean, it's not a question of I mean, it used to be that if you push past seven or before seven, the baby's not going to live. But now what's happening, and Kevin's brought it up, is the amount of weeks at which most states allow an abortion is bumping over into the time when the kids are viable.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah,
if you are anti-abortion, I think that's a fair point. The science is so much better now, you can make a good argument about it. I completely stay away from this topic because one, I don't care about it.
It's toxic.
And two, I think it's a personal decision that should be private that people can make if they want. It's their
body. I'll say this though. Make it right away, the decision, for God's sake. What do you gotta wait 7 months to decide you want to get
from? How about starting with coherent sex education, maybe providing people with easily accessible birth control? That's the problem. The people who are anti-abortion are anti-everything else.
Yeah.
Which I've never understood.
And so we should have a coherent policy on that from beginning to end.
Well, before we, let's talk market here first, but before, when we were learning, I was sitting in Marist High School and they're teaching you essentially anatomy, for lack of a better term.
And you're laughing in the back.
Well, yeah.
I did.
But I'll say this. They,
well, I know. It's just a penis.
After the birth control had just been invented, the pill, right? I'm guessing this is 1966. It had to be right along that time, Frank. I mean, I don't really, you know, I don't, couldn't have been much earlier than that. The thought of fasting forward essentially 55 years.
Birth control was invented in 1960.
Yeah, okay.
So you're dead on.
So the thought of, in 2019, you sitting there in high school, the thought that there would be a gazillion unwanted pregnancies of all shapes and sizes and ages 50 years later never even crossed your mind. You would have thought people would have figured this out by now. And the only time you would have kids is if you pretty much wanted one. I mean, intelligent people that are 40 years old don't realize what can happen when you have, I mean, for God's sake. I mean, you would never think the problem would be this big. I mean, I never, at that age. I mean, now this stuff's been available forever and these problems are still with us. I mean, God, did we ever get any better? You know, I don't know. Anyway, so.
It's a good point. But you have
but
one,
a lot of it, we're preventing access.
Right, you have one side that doesn't even believe
that
in birth control,
birth control,
which I don't understand.
Yeah, which I don't get either, you know. But
or limiting access, let's say.
All right, Frank. We've had a very slow morning worldwide, although we got the NASDAQ is up 15. We have a little bit of a pause in this very heated rally. I mentioned earlier to Kevin, I don't know if, I made a mistake. Talk about aggravating myself. I went to the money supply numbers. In all my days, I've never seen, except maybe when Volcker came in, a guy getting beaten up like this. And a month and a half ago, you were on and I said, of course the market is going to have trouble, is going to struggle here because the Fed is down to a 3.5% money supply growth, which is right where they should be. That's where they historically should be, especially when the economy is only grown by, I'll say one or two. I'll be charitable and won't say zero if you use the right, inflation number. Well, you know, since this guy's been beaten up and went to dinner at the White House, they basically must have told him, look, here's the deal. You buy the futures, you come out, you increase the money, nobody cares when the Grim Reaper is going to come to the front door. It hasn't happened for 8 years. It's not going to happen in 6 months. Get yourself out of everybody's face on TV where all they do is criticize you. Make some money on the futures. Have a nice time. I mean, I don't know if I'm not accusing him of... I mean, now he's piled in. You know what the money supply growth was the last week? Six.
No idea.
Six.
We're
back to six.
You're the only guy in the media that even talks the money supply in the U.S.
It's true.
Why do you think all of a sudden in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, the market is going up? Duh.
Money for nothing.
Every time you see a change in the money supply growth, going back to 1968, you see a movement in the market. And the only thing I regret is I know this as much as I know, you know, where my left foot is, and yet when I see it going up, I don't just buy stuff for everybody. I just should. Just hold my nose and buy it. I keep thinking, this time people have figured it out. It's already in the market. It's something, and it just never is. You can't even imagine how much money's left over at the end of the day going in someplace, just pumping up asset prices. And one of these days they'll go back
3%.
One of these days they'll pull back. I mean, if you look at these numbers, as soon as they started to pull back to the 3.7% range last September, all you got to do is sell everything. And now that they have been educated, I use that term, it's back up to 6. We're going right back up again. Now, how long it lasts, and how long till one day they actually get an inflation number that they're worried about, and another Paul Volcker takes charge, whether it's 2, 3, 5 years, no, I don't know. But isn't that wild, Frank? I mean, now the question is how much of it's baked in. We've been up 6 days in a row. I read the numbers yesterday. Obviously, we weren't first to read them. Or I didn't get the call from the Fed saying, we're buying, not selling.
They must have overlooked your number. I'm surprised you didn't get the call.
Yeah, well, people do get the call because instead of the Fed calling up and saying, you know, here's some bonds to sell, which means we're taking money out of the system. I'm a buyer. Go find me some. Well, as soon as the banks get that call, you don't think they run out and buy futures? Why wouldn't you if you're in that spot?
And there's only four banks left. I mean,
well, there's still how many?
A small group.
There's still what, 8 or 9 prime dealers?
Yeah, but that's.
Did the prime dealers get any? I'm asking a question. I don't know if you answered to it, Frank. Did the prime dealers get? Get any of the juice in the secondary market trades or no? I'm thinking no. To go back on this, I got to explain this for a second. When the Fed comes out with a new issue, okay, there's nine, is it nine? Maybe only eight now because the guy that the place that went under was the ninth, right? So maybe there's only eight. They all get a piece of the new issue of the Fed stuff. They get it probably what a little bit of a discount, Frank, and then they go out and sell it. So they actually make commissions on the sale. They're called prime dealers because they get the new offerings. But every week or every twice a week, when the New York Fed goes out in the market and actually buys or sells, used to be U.S. Paper with notes and bonds and so forth, and now they obviously are still doing mortgages. But those guys. That's a secondary market, and they pay commissions. But also, that phone call, is there anything more important in the world than that phone call, Frank? We're buying, we're selling on that Monday morning?
And somebody gets paid, because why would they do it for free?
They pay them commissions, and they essentially go out and assemble the stuff to give to the Fed. meaning in our parlance, front runner. That's an incredible spot to be in. Even you and
Someone
I can make
good
dough
as being
that.
A member of Congress.
I'm going to say that Matty Weber can make dough doing that. Let me get this straight. You guys are a buyer. I'll go out and buy it ahead of you and turn around and sell it to you more, and I get a commission.
That's a good model.
What the kids say at Animal House? This is great. S&P futures up 1.25. Dow futures up 19. S&P futures up 15.75. Thank you, Frank. Are you going to watch the ND Miami game tonight? I'd like to see him win this one. At least get back in the middle of the pack somewhere.
Yeah, I'll listen to it.
Yeah, man.
I'm old enough that I can actually listen to a basketball game and know what's going on.
Oh, God. All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Matty, good job with all the people calling in. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.